From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show. I don't know about you, but fixing bugs, it's kind of like a one of those things where you're glad you get it done because it's fixed, but at the same time, it kind of sucks because you're not working on stuff that kind of pushes your product forward. Anyway, bugs suck. And today's sponsor is here to kind of help us through this kind of really buggy situation. And today's sponsor is Instabug. They are one of the simplest yet most comprehensive bug reporting and in-app feedback SDKs that's out there. Now, here's what that kind of really means in layman's terms. Your users and beta testers or whoever's using your app can submit certain feedback to your application just by shaking the phone. You know how you kind of get frustrated when like things don't work? You kind of shake your phone a little bit. Like, I want to kind of throw mine. I don't throw it because I want to use it, but I feel like throwing it. But anyway, they'll be able to, at that point, it will be able to take a screenshot. You can, or they can, draw and annotate and highlight any sensitive data that may be on the screenshot or whatever. They can probably even leave you nice, sensitive, happy notes inside of there, or ones that are kind of not so happy. But hey, that's up to your users. So they can then also submit those back to you, which is fantastic. Getting a screenshot, seeing that for some reason your row is 45, you know, density pixels off to the left of where it should be is always interesting, and trying to figure that out through the bug report is kind of weird. Sometimes we like to see those things right there on the screen along with a bug report, and that's what Instabug kind of allows them to do. Instabug will automatically also provide developers with any device details, which would be those, you know, logs that are on your application, any maybe steps to reproduce that can be provided, and a view hierarchy inspection with every report, which is pretty fantastic, knowing that, hey, this view for some reason is 45 density pixels off to the left, etc. They provide, of course, crash reporting, and what's nice is it's automatically sent to you along with a complete stack once the crash occurs. So kind of common stuff for a lot of these bug companies, but they do offer a lot of other things here. The other great thing here, which is super simple, and things I like about Instabug, is it takes one line of code to integrate the SDK. To me, that's a huge win. Anytime I have to pull down an SDK, throw in, hey, put this line here, and then add a line over here, then add 12 lines over here, you know, then do a dance and tap your head while you're rubbing your belly, that's kind of just too much. It's one line of code with Instabug. Bing, bang, boom, you're done. Now, more than 20,000 companies rely on Instabug to enhance the app quality and iterate faster, and some of those include big companies such as Lyft, eBay, and T-Mobile, and many more. Other cool thing is here is Instabug does have a free plan for mobile developers, and they're actually giving something away with today's promotion. You'll receive a t-shirt with their motto that says, I squash bugs for a living. If you go to instabug.com/fragmented, sign up and integrate the SDK, which again is only one line of code. So you can get your free t-shirt of I squash bugs for a living by going to instabug.com/fragmented.
I also want to thank Nevercode, our sponsor. Nevercode is a continuous integration service for mobile pros. It's that simple. The company was born from a very simple idea: help mobile app developers build better apps faster. The service helps developers build, test, and deploy both native and cross-platform mobile applications. They do this automatically without any human interaction. And you all know, I usually love that. Always trust our machines to do the mundane tasks. The humans can do the more interesting stuff. They also strive to make sure that you have less configuration headache when using the service. But here's what's really cool about them. As a mobile-first CI service, Nevercode is taking the Flutter revolution extremely seriously. They now support projects exclusively built on Flutter. If you have a Flutter project, they provide a pretty kick-ass CI for Flutter, so definitely give them a shot. Now you might be thinking, well, what we have kind of works. Do I really need a CI service? Is it worth it? Nevercode has gone and analyzed more than 75,000 builds. They did the math and calculated that their product saves up to 20% of developers' workday. Think about that for a second. That's about 10 weeks per year. I'll paste the link in the show notes to the blog post where they talk about this in some detail. CI is a must-have these days if you want to build a professional, stable mobile app. And if you want to give Nevercode a shot, head on over to nevercode.io for a 14-day free trial. They also have a lot of good resources for mobile app developers on their blog, nevercode.io/blog. So you should definitely check it out. Thanks again for sponsoring today's show, Nevercode.
Kaushik, how have you been?
I have been good, sir. How is the wonderful state of New Jersey treating you?
Been a lot of gray skies lately. I feel like I'm in Seattle, sort of. But other than that, it's been pretty good. How about San Francisco?
San Francisco has been nice. It is getting a little chilly because we are heading towards winter. But I mean, you know, it's a San Francisco winter. So
fog?
Some days it's nice and sunny. Some days it's very foggy. Some days it's just chilly. You just got to layer up and, you know, brave the weather.
Now, you probably know this. I don't know if I heard somewhere, and for the folks that are in San Francisco listening to this show, it's probably old news to them. But for folks that are not from there, which is a lot of listeners, there's something, is it something like called Carl the Fog? Is that what they call it?
I think I know what you're talking about, but I don't exactly know the reference. I mean, I've heard offhand what it is, but yeah, I mean, the fog is pretty, it can get pretty intense here, so.
Oh, it looks like I just looked up here. So it's the name Carl,
K-A-R-L.
Yeah, Carl the Fog is in reference to a 2003 film, The Big Fish. So it's like kind of like the fog that kind of rolls in or something like that. But it's interesting. I guess there's a name. I've seen people post online saying, hey, Carl's rolling in, and they're talking about the fog that rolls into San Francisco all the time.
Yeah, I just searched for Carl the Fog, and on the right here, I see San Francisco fog. So
anyway, though, I had a question for you. It's kind of interesting. I wanted to talk about, have you ever felt, the right term for it is, I'm not even say the right term for it. Have you ever felt just like when you're doing something, just like, wow, I feel like a complete idiot. Like I should know this, but I don't.
Oh, like you mean like the imposter syndrome kind of thing?
That's the term. Yeah. Like you think like you feel like you should know it. And then you're just like, wow, like how have I got this far and I don't know this thing over here? I feel like I feel like that more and more. And it's not something that has just recently popped up. It's kind of always been there. And it could happen from someone I'll be working with at a client. They'll show me something and it's something maybe I have never seen before. And I'm like, wow, where did this API come from? I'm like, this is crazy. I love this. And I'll look it up on developers.android.com. And it's like there since API level 1. And I'm like, oh my God, how do I, I'm such an idiot. Like, and at the end of the day, it's just one of those things that just kind of grinds on you. And I think that, I think it's important to bring up that I feel that a lot of people probably suffer from imposter syndrome. And I know that I do quite a bit. And I just kind of want to talk about it and see if you encounter that or what.
Oh my God. Yeah. it's funny. I was like, oh no, what is that? I've never faced that before. I was like, oh God, no. I mean, that I guess is a story of like every developer every single day, right? And I think you put it really well. The idea is sometimes you discover like this thing that you think you should know. Like it seems very basic. And I mean, this happens so many times in the team where I'm like, I'm describing this problem and I'm like, oh, I tried like this weird hack around and I did like these three or four things. And then they come out and say, did you just look at that API? It's like a one-line call and it does pretty much what you're asking, only it does it better. Let me give you an example of something I saw recently. This was, so the idea is like when you test your app, did you know you can actually in the developer options set your background process limit to 0? Like that's something, it seems so obvious. But for some reason, I never knew this, you know? And every time I had to test the case where your app gets, like, you know, terminated or killed, I would have to, like, run, like, some weird ADB, like, kill command. Because I think in the early days, that's how it was done. And I just, like, never relearned the process. But then I think it was Matt who was on the show recently. Like, I remember seeing his Twitter feed or something once. And then he posted that, and like in the developer options, there's now an option that says background process limit, you can set it to 0. And for testing, usually that works pretty well. It's just like one of those moments I was like, this seems like so obvious that I should have known, you know? And that's just one example. There's multiple examples like this where I feel absolutely like I feel I should have known this, but I don't. And like for someone who's worked with Android for some time now, it sometimes feels very unnerving that you wouldn't know the basics,
yeah,
or, you know, in quotes. But, you know, a smart person in an episode that we had once told me, you know, you cannot learn everything.
that's the truth. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm referring to an episode that Don did, by the way, which is a fantastic episode. We'll add that to the show notes as well. But the funny thing with the imposter syndrome, and the reason I was also very curious to talk to you about this, is I definitely have the syndrome, but I think I'm getting better at just accepting that I'm a dummy and I don't know some, like, half of this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, like, the weird shift that I've noticed in recent years, and I wanted to talk to you about that. I definitely do have imposter syndrome, like, where I have that nag that tells me, like, wait a minute, like, you should have known this, and, like, or how do I not know this thing that seems so simple, you know?
Yeah.
But that being said, I've become more comfortable with just not knowing. Like, you know, there are days when I go and I'm like, I don't know, and I'm just comfortable asking people. And one of, and this is, like, outside of just, like, development, one of the most powerful things, I don't know where I read this or if it was, like, one of my mentors that told me. They basically said that one of the most powerful things that you can ask someone when you're trying to learn is, like, can you help me learn this? You know, asking that to a person can be very powerful because, A, you're in some ways making them feel good about themselves in that, like, they feel that they can help you in or contribute in some ways. And the other thing is, like, you're learning, right? And this is another, like, and I'm almost certain I've told this in a previous podcast here, but one of the most important lessons that I've learned, like, growing up in college was one of my professors, like, said it was either, like, Newton or some, you know, scientist that said, I'm willing to look foolish if it means I'll learn something. Mm-hmm. And that has just stuck with me really well. And I've really, in many ways, embraced that. And I was like, I don't mind looking like an idiot, even if I have to ask this most basic question, because, you know what? Not knowing already makes me a bigger idiot. So I would rather just suck it up this time, learn, and then after that, you know, hopefully I won't forget and, you know, I will move forward. So what are your thoughts around that? Do you find that with the multiple years that you've been going, working, you know, in just development in general, what are your tips and strategies to sort of take care of this? Because this is something that cripples everyone, right? Like, not a day goes by where you would find, like, a meme or, like, on Twitter, some developer complained that, hey, imposter syndrome is real and I face this.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different tips and tricks. And as much as I would love to be able to stand on a pedestal and say, I've got this figured out, here's what you should do, I don't have it figured out. And that's one of the reasons why, to this day, I still will struggle with some level of imposter syndrome. And it can happen in various different forms. It can happen, like you said, when you're developing something and you run across something and someone points something out. Yeah, you could just use this one API over here. And you're like, didn't even know that existed. And then at that point, you, like, question yourself of, like, wow, I'm supposed to be the senior person on this team here. Why didn't I know that? And, you know, and it kind of, like, those kind of things. And what that is, that's kind of like your ego. To me, how I interpret it is that's my ego saying, like, Don, you should know this. Why don't you know this? And then I, like, start going into this, like, circle of, like, introspection of, like, well, maybe I don't know everything I should know. Like, oh, maybe I shouldn't know. I should be spending some more time reading the documentation. Maybe I should be doing this. And then it just snowballs. And then it just gets worse and worse and worse. And then it can even, like, turn into a full-blown avalanche of imposter syndrome when during the same day or the same kind of, you know, flow that you're in of developing, that you run into something else you don't know. And you just keep hitting these walls. And then you kind of, like, put your hands into your head, into your hands, and you're just like, what is going on? Like, I just feel like a complete failure right now. And I think that's the way a lot of people feel. And I'm going to sum it up by this something that happened to me very recently. A lot of times, a lot of folks know I work remotely, but I do need to actually go out and see people in the real world. I can't sit in my office all day alone. So I'll go to Starbucks. I won't talk to anybody. I'll sit there, maybe talk to the barista when I'm getting a drink, and I'll sit down. And I was getting a drink, and the barista says, hey, what's going on? I said, hey, nothing, you know? And he said, what are you doing? I'm like, just getting to work. And he goes, okay, cool. He's like, what do you do for work? I said, well, I'm a programmer. And he goes, oh, programmer, really? He goes, so what's that like? He's like, what's it like being a programmer? And I stopped for a second. I thought about it, and I was like, it's like, well, I said, at times you can feel like a god because you can just create something out of nothing. I said, and then on the other times you feel like the stupidest person on earth. But here's the thing, you can feel both ways all within a time span of 1 hour. And I tweeted that recently, and a lot of people, like, responded to that. And then I started recognizing more and more folks are out there like, you know, hey, I've been coding for 15 or 20 years and I just Googled how to set a CSS selector, or I just Googled how to set a style on an Android, how to change the background color on the toolbar, which is still too complicated, but we'll talk about that another time. But for me, what I try to do is what you've said is like, I got to realize like I can't learn everything. And early on in Android, the landscape was much smaller. But even back in 2008, Android was still actually very huge. I mean, it's an operating system. It's humongous. You've got networking. You've got all kinds of crap. But you could kind of get your hands around it. And we've talked about this before. But now there's so much stuff in Android that a new library comes out. And if I... honestly, it's like, okay, cool. There's a new Android Kotlin thing over here that helps you with X, Y, and Z. If I'm not using that thing over there, I'm probably not going to take the time to go invest in it if it's not going to help me right now, because I need to go get something else done. I have to recognize like, you know what? I can't learn that. And I'll do what I'm calling like JIT, just-in-time learning. And so that's been a huge help for me. And then what also has been a huge help for me is actually seeing other people that I respect in the community asking questions out there. So it's someone who might have a lot of experience and I'll say, hey, I'm having a problem with X, Y, and Z. What am I doing wrong? Or how can I do this? And you'll see these people on like Stack Overflow or Slack groups or et cetera. And then there's like the kind of the classic one that I've bookmarked. I'll find the bookmark so we can put it in the show notes. And that's Larry Page's Java question from 1996, I think it was, where he was on a news group back then or a bulletin board. And he had a question about how something worked in Java. And it's like, even the people at the top of the world, like, you know, in technology, start off somewhere and run into problems. And so I think it doesn't answer your question exactly. It's just realizing that I can't learn it all. And it's just having to constantly remind myself of that over and over and over.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, I don't think this is something that's very easy for most of like us developers to sort of like conquer, but you just have to make peace with it. I also thought it was interesting like that you mentioned the funny thing is with imposter syndrome, it can actually take different shapes and forms as you progress through your career. And in many ways, in the early days, I felt like an imposter because I was like, well, people are paying me to do this and I don't know what to do, you know, the early stages. Later on, when you work with it enough and you're able to at least like produce something, you think, I've been working on this for so long and somehow I feel like I still don't have a grasp of it, right? Mm-hmm. And then as you progress more and like you have a team, you're like, I'm the senior most person in this team, but somehow it seems like I don't know enough. And that's just so fascinating to me that, you know, this imposter syndrome just rears its ugly form, but in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but there's also like a positive side to it because in many ways it keeps, and you mentioned it well, you said there's an element of the ego that comes in. In many ways, it helps keep that in check, you know?
Mm-hmm. It does. And one of the other things, I forgot, I should have brought this up before. One of the things that really, really helps me is, I wish I knew where I learned it from, but essentially is when you start to feel this way, you have like this imposter syndrome, like I don't know this, or you're feeling this anxiety about something like, wow, I just feel out of my element here. I try to reapproach it from a beginner mindset. I was like, all right, I am a beginner. Like I don't know this library. I don't know this tool. Maybe I'm diving into a brand new language. I don't know this. Let me approach it from a beginner who wants to learn, because at the core, that's exactly what we were all at one point. We're a beginner in somewhere. And if I could take myself back to that point, it's like, all right, let me ask a question that a beginner would ask. And then I ask that question. I'm like, all right, well, let me now re-engage what was happening when I was originally learning these things. It's curiosity. Curiosity is the underlying thing here. Like, well, let me get curious about this thing. Like, all right, well, how does this work? Like, maybe I really don't care about dependency injection, or I don't care about this other library, or I don't care about X, Y, and Z, but I want to know, how does this thing work? Let me get curious about it. And then what I usually find is then that gives me a thread to grab onto, which I can start unraveling things. And then I'll start get the answers that I want. And then what also will happen during that time is you'll run into another roadblock of like, wow, I don't understand this thing that's related to this. Well, let me unravel that. And then all of a sudden you have like this big spider web of like concepts that kind of come together to build the, you know, the fundamental understanding of the thing you're trying to learn or you're having trouble with. It's one of those things I think that we have to remind ourselves of all the time, that it happens to every single person out there. And even the people that are beginners, they start to think like, There's no way I can be good at programming. I suck at this. There's no way I can be good as X, Y, and Z person or these other people I follow online. And there's times I feel like that. I look, I'm like, wow, there's no way I could be like, you know, Linus Torvalds or one of these, you know, folks that are out there that have built these amazing systems. But there's things that they don't know too, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's actually a good point that you bring that up. It's okay to not be like, you know, not everyone can be like Linus Torvalds, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's fine. You know, you contribute in different ways. You bring a different skill set to the table. Like you cannot, not everyone can be, you know, not everyone can expect to be a John Carmack or something, you know, like yeah. Some people just have it in them, like, you know, and that's okay. That doesn't necessarily mean you cannot make a meaningful, a contribution to programming or the industry, right? And sometimes, even if you see like some of the biggest projects, I've talked to a lot of like open source maintainers, all of them say sometimes that, you know, this just started out as like a side dinky little project that I was just curious to see. I had no idea it would balloon into this thing or become this like sophisticated, like open source, like repository. I've seen that happen so many times. So mm-hmm. I mean, again, just to re-echo the thing that you mentioned, I think that's a really good point. I never thought of it like that way, but that curiosity is a really good way to combat it. I feel like if you're just constantly curious and trying to find the immediate next step without worrying about the meta stuff, right? Like, you don't worry too much about the fact that you don't know this already or like that you need to learn more. Just be curious in the moment and try to understand the very next step. And I think that definitely sort of helps it. I wish it was easy enough to say, hey, you know, everyone feels this, don't feel imposter syndrome. But it's kind of weird because I have actually seen this in myself where I've become completely comfortable being an imposter. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, nope, I don't know. You would, yep, sorry, I just have no clue how to do this thing. I'll have to Google it with you or like, yeah. You know.
And that happens a lot. Like sometimes people, I mean, they probably come to you too or me. And for example, I was working with someone this morning. I was working on some actual Ruby code for a different project that I had on the server side for API stuff. And someone said, hey, I don't understand what's happening over here in Ruby. And like, I had no idea what was going on either. It was like some cryptography stuff that I hadn't dove into at all. And so I was like, well, let me pull down your branch and let's kind of walk through it together. And we kind of just like started trying things out. And I was just kind of talking out loud, like, here's what I do when this doesn't work. Or like, you know, I start, you know, just general debugging stuff. And like, all of a sudden get to the end. I'm like, cool. Like, looks like it works now. And I'm like, we are making this silly mistake over here. Like, okay, no big deal. And it's just like, you can't, there's no way that you're going to know it all. And this really, again, struck home for me earlier this week. I'm integrating some old legacy Java code into our project, which is mainly Kotlin. And we're making the decision right now not to rewrite and convert this into Kotlin because there's just a bunch of, it's not tested. There's a bunch of stuff we need to do. So we're just kind of being very delicate. And we're pulling over the Java code and I had to make a couple changes. And I'm like, this thing is not compiling. I'm like, what is going on? Why am I getting these red squigglies in the IDE? And I'm like, this thing is so stupid. I hate Android. I hate Android Studio. Like, screw this. Ready to flip over the table. And then all of a sudden, like, I just stopped. I'm like, all right, take a deep breath. What's going on? And I look back at it and I was like, you idiot. You forgot the semicolon. This is Java. And there's those points. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is another one of them. You know, like, it is what it is. It happens to us all.
And this is like a sort of meta point, like a side tangent, but these days I feel quickly I'm going to forget how to write Java code. Like, I'm so used to like Kotlin having these things.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, filter, map, and it's almost taken for granted that it gets to the, like, you know, collections, filter, sort. It's mm-hmm. getting to the point where I'm like, oh boy, I'm going to forget how to write Java.
Oh, you will. Like, you'll open a Java file and you'll start typing like, okay, cool, I'm going to do this thing, .let, .apply, whatever, you know, some of the shortcuts you can get from Kotlin, or, you know, those collection things. And all of a sudden you're like, ah, it's not there. Like, great. I got to loop over that. Oh, I got to check for null like 13 times before I can access that value.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten to the point where these days, even if I have like a Java file that I don't want to refactor to Kotlin, I'll probably just like create like a small service class or like a helper class in like Kotlin and just
extension
write it.
Extension function
like,
somewhere.
Exactly. Seriously. Because it's just so much more easier. Like, sometimes I just feel I don't want to get slowed down like in thinking like how to solve the problem. And it just feels so dirty doing it in Java.
It's so funny that we were talking about this, like Java and how Kotlin's better and imposter syndrome all at the same time, because back in 2008, when I started in Android, I came from a C# background, and so I was used to having Lambda functions. I was used to having like all this like language integrated query functions built into C#. And then I came into Java and I started complaining. And I said, guys, like, you know, folks, where can we do these map functions, all this stuff? And they're just like, or select or whatever I was doing. And are like, what are you talking about? Like, this is just Java, just loop over it. And at that point, like, I felt like I had imposter syndrome because I'm like, maybe like I'm missing something here that Java like is doing that I'm not seeing. But no, it was just Java didn't do it. And I felt like I had imposter syndrome there. I was like, wow, I'm a developer with 10 years of experience already. And like, I can't make my way around Java that well, but it was actually just the fault of the language. And now folks are getting to the point where they're familiar with Kotlin now and they think like, wow, there's no way I can go back to Java. And I kind of look back and say, I told you so. I knew it.
I was just early to forget everything.
But I mean, it happens to everybody. And I'm glad more and more people have been talking about it on Twitter. At least there's been some folks, some GDEs and so forth that talk about, hey, you know, I am doing XYZ in Android. I just had to Google it. And, you know, it's good. I think it's important for other people to see that out there, that to know that, you know, this is a process. And one of the things that, before we kind of wrap everything up, but I wanted to say is, if in your community of friends and family, most likely you probably have people that you know are maybe like, so-and-so is a lawyer, so-and-so is a doctor, so-and-so is an architect, so-and-so, you know, is a nurse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what you end up finding is most of the time, a lot of these professions, folks can learn almost everything they need to learn, and it rarely changes. And if it does change, it's very slow moving changing. With programming, that's not the case. Like right now, we're working in an environment I'm familiar with it maybe, and in 2 weeks, something else is going to come out and I'll be completely lost again and I'll have to relearn it, reapply it. And this industry is just changing all the time. And that can give you a sense of like, wow, I can't keep up. I don't know what to do. So it's normal to feel that way.
Yeah, it's 100%. I think even, you know, sometimes you look at like doctors and stuff. I mean, obviously their industry changes a lot too. In no way am I saying that no other industry is like ours, but the pace of change where you can go like 3 to 4 years not doing something and then come back and just be a complete noob, you know, like because the industry just changes so fast and the things that are current are like no longer current. So I think, I think it's okay. Like we just have to start getting more comfortable with the idea that, hey, sometimes it's okay that we wouldn't know something, but you have to be willing to learn, right? And I think in the end, that's what, you know, sometimes people come like and ask me, especially if it's like younger kids or like, you know, like parents who like are asking like, you know, in some ways like advice for their kids if they should be like embarking into like this field. In the end, it boils down to that. Do you enjoy this process of learning, that curiosity, right? Do you enjoy that? Because you're going to be having a whole bunch of that, you know, like every single day, like at least for the first, and I remember, and I'm sure this is probably the case for you too. The first 2 years of my career was basically all just Googling literally every single thing.
Everything. Know?
Sometimes it can be frustrating because you constantly think like, is this how my life is going to be? Like I want to do X. I don't even know where to start. So I'll Google this thing. I'll start there, learn that, come back and then try to apply it and then rack my head around like why it's not working, go back and then Google again for like solutions. That is going to be the story of your life for a major part of like your initial years. And even now, like I feel in many ways, I think the only difference is it's now just, it helps you recollect, right? Like for example, sometimes I look at basic stuff that doesn't work. I was like, oh, wait, how does that activity life cycle thing work again? Like, oh, which was the right order?
Totally.
I just like go back, I look at it and it comes back faster. I will say that just because like, and obviously there's like multiple years of beating my head like against the problem, it comes back faster, but that doesn't necessarily mean I know it off the top of my head. And so if someone asks me, I'm like, hey, I don't know. I just have to like Google that, you know?
Yeah. That, you bring up the number one example that I get imposter syndrome about is the Android life cycle. Every single time we get this weird thing happening with life cycle, the conversation will pick up on Slack or on Zoom or whatever. And we're like, all right, well, is that happening on destroy or is it happening on stop or to start? Should we be keeping that around or should we be doing that on create or on fret? Which one's happening first? And then like every time someone's like, no, stop happens. No, pause that. Like we all go back and forth and I'm just like, oh, now I got to go look it up again. And I'm like, geez, I'm like, I must have looked at this diagram 1,000 times by now and I still don't have it memorized. And it's just one of those things, like, it's so crazy. I mean, we had Kristen on the show. We'll get a link to her show in the show notes. She explained the Android lifecycle well, but I think that's something that a lot of people still grasp with, is definitely like, all right, how does this thing work? And thank goodness for the lifecycle components to make things a lot easier. But it's just one of those complicated things you continually have to do. And
oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, speaking about lifecycle, recently, I retweeted this. Jose, who's also a friend of the show, who's been on the show, I think, before, he tweeted this out during like the Kotlin conf, during like the recent Kotlin conf. And like, there's this really nice like cheat sheet for the Android lifecycle that I've started to use. I'll make sure to share that in the show notes. So, because that I found that super helpful. I literally just keep this bookmarked now, because every time I need to like go back and look at it, I just look at this directly. So it's super easy.
Is that the one that's created by Jose?
Yeah. I think it's like a Medium blog post.
Yeah.
But it just has like these diagrams. Then just looking at these diagrams immediately, you know, it makes it really easy. It's a fantastic blog post too. So we'll definitely add that to the show notes.
Totally. I think of the life cycle. I'm just getting like flustered again. I'm like, yeah, let's just stop with that one.
Yeah, it's one of those things where just, you know, if it was easy, it would be good, but it's not. But hey, you know, you deal with what you have.
Exactly. Well, again, I think to wrap everything up here, it's just important to note that I will probably occasionally have imposter syndrome and have to remind myself, hey, go back to the basics. You know, everybody has it, can't learn everything. And those things always help. And I think it's something that folks should definitely learn. Is there anything else that you want to share in regards to the topic, Kaushik?
No, I think you've covered it pretty well. Like I like some of your strategies, and I'll let you know how it goes after my next few weeks of applying these strategies.
with continual practice. It's never mastery here.
Mm-hmm. That's the way to go.
Hey, it's me again. I was going to talk to you about bugs. Like the ones with the little creepy crawly legs. The ones that kind of like crawl on your face at night and you wake up and then they smack your face. You wake up and then you can't go back to bed because now you just got woken up because you smacked yourself in the face. No, not really. Not those kind of bugs. Here to talk about Instabug. Instabug's the sponsor for today's episode. Again, Instabug will allow you to submit feedback through the application by shaking your phone violently. Not really violently, I just wanted to say that. And then you can take a screenshot, draw, annotate, highlight sensitive data, send it back with logs, reports, all kinds of good old stuff. Go to instabug.com/fragmented, integrate the application with one line of code, and they'll send you a free t-shirt that says, "I squash bugs for a living." For most of us, that's a 100% true statement. instabug.com/fragmented.
I also want to thank Nevercode for sponsoring the show. Nevercode is a CI service that's one of the first that's taking the Flutter revolution pretty seriously. You can head on over to nevercode.io for a 14-day free trial. They also have a bunch of interesting resources for mobile app development over at their blog, nevercode.io/blog. My thanks to Nevercode again for sponsoring the show. That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.